Welcome to the Cyber Ranch Podcast, recorded under the big blue skies of Texas, where one CISO explores the cybersecurity landscape with the help of friends and experts. Here's your host, Alan Alford, President and CISO at Alan Alford Consulting.
Howdy, y'all, and welcome to the Cyber Ranch Podcast. It's Alan here, and I'm flying solo this week. This is kind of a follow-up to my last solo show about ownership of risk and accountability. This show is all about selling the mission and what that really means and what that entails, and some nuances about how we can actually do that. So without further ado, let's get started. My friend Helen Patton, she's been on the show before. She posted on LinkedIn just this week about the various CISO roles. She talked about the fact that we call ourselves CISOs, and yet there's a bazillion kinds of CISOs. There's the enterprise CISO for a public company, for a private company. There's an enterprise CISO in government and public sector. There's a product CISO, a startup CISO, a business unit CISO, aka a BISO. There's a virtual CISO, fractional CISO, interim CISO, CISO in name only is one of the ones she put out there, and a field CISO. And I would even argue that within enterprise CISO, you've got sort of mid-market versus big enterprise versus even Fortune, you know, Fortune 5 or 10. Probably by the time you reach Fortune 100, you've got a very different mindset and approach for the CISO than you do with a mid-market CISO. And this is coming from somebody who's done, I've mentioned this before, I've been a CISO in companies as small as 5 and as many as 50,000. So I've kind of done the full gamut. Most of mine have probably been in the 3,000 to 10,000 range, more mid-market, I would call it, than enterprise. But obviously at the mid-market, you're aspiring to be an enterprise CISO in the terms of how you roll out and what you do and the maturity of the organization. So mid-market is kind of unique. You've still got some of those startup level rapid decisions made, but everybody's eyeing enterprise and heading that way. But the point of all that is every story is different, and it's really important to remember that. We talk all the time on this show about what the CISO should and shouldn't do, and even I, who've been in all these contexts, sort of forget and tend to think of the context I'm in at the moment. Right now, I'm doing a lot of startup CISO work and some enterprise consulting, and it's a real different game. Like a startup CISO is probably selling at kind of the EDR, you know, MDM, DLP level. In other words, you've got your minimum viable security stack that you're trying to get going. You've probably got reactionary customer demanded scenarios that crop up. You've got a big bid and the big bid says you must have DLP and the company really wants the bid. Well, guess what? You're now rolling out DLP. But in between those moments of demand are these moments where you're just trying to get a minimum viable stack up and running. And so you're sort of selling at the solution level and, you know, EDR, we need it because of this. DLP, we need it because of that. That sort of approach versus an enterprise CISO for a large org is rarely selling that way. They've already got their minimum viable security stack for one thing. But for another thing, that kind of argument, that kind of selling just falls flat on enterprise ears. If you look at where the Fortune 500 CISO lives, they're probably more about addressing business problems than they are about selling at the solution level, right? And I had Melanie Ensign on the show last night. Yes, I am recording this show literally the morning it releases. But last night I recorded Melanie Ensign for last week's show. And she pointed out when I talked about selling all the time and selling the problem and selling the solution and the fact that CISOs are one of the few roles that have to sell the problem, she said, stop all that and just solve business problems, right? And that's the crux of what I'm getting at where these Fortune 500, Fortune 100 CISOs live. And I've got some tips on this. So we've talked about board reporting before, and I've talked about what I put in the board report and what I put in the ELT report, and it stack ranks three ways in priority order. So the first thing I put in the board report is business objective alignment. We have known objectives for the business, and we need to prove that security is in alignment with those objectives. Here's how I'm assisting. Here's how I'm facilitating. Here's how I'm enabling. All that good stuff. Then you have known business risks and how security is reducing those. And then you have the overall maturity of the org. And I'm a big believer in the maturity thing. I know a lot of CISOs don't, but that's a topic for a different show. Let's focus on one and two, the business objective alignment and the known business risk reduced. But before we do that, I really want to pivot. And I want to pivot into the notion of selling itself. CISOs see selling as a dirty word. We get sold to all the time. It's anathema. sold to constantly, and we've grown to hate it, right? But let's break down selling from the perspective of an experienced person on the sales side of the fence. So let's say a chief revenue officer. If you have ever gotten to know your chief revenue officer and really, you know, gone to lunch with them and learned their world and learned their method and learned their means and learned their ways, they will tell you that there are several rules to the game of selling. The first one is you build relationships. Relationships last, one-off sales do not, right? And one of the secrets in the sales community is that you build those relationships because you may be at a different company in a year or 3 years. And if you have that relationship, you can sell to them anew. That's one of the motivators behind that, but they'll all tell you that relationships are more important than one-off sales. Second thing any good salesperson will tell you is know your customer. Know their needs and desires, know their motivations, know their fears, know what drives them. This is just so you can help contextualize what you're doing, which ties us to know your audience. You want to tailor your message to achieve the best results. This is number three, know your audience. And number four is know your limits. Every CISO knows they've got limits, and every CRO knows they've got limits. You'll always hear that phrase, don't get out over your skis. In other words, be able to deliver on what you promise. That applies to the CRO and the CISO both. So if we look at it that way and look at those four bullets, is selling really and truly a bad thing? This is good advice for achieving goals in life no matter what. Whether it's actual quote-unquote selling or not, if you're trying to get a mission achieved in an organization that contains multiple people, which any organization by definition does, you're going to be relying on those four skills to get across what you're trying to get across. I mean, I have a friend who says politics is what happens whenever two or more people have different goals or desires. Like, it's that simple. That is the definition of politics. People talk about avoiding politics in the workplace. It's impossible to avoid politics in the workplace. The very nature of this person and that person have different goals is politics. The very nature of we have a limited amount of resources, which we're sharing collectively, and your goals are, or my goals are going to be the ones met, but not the other, right? Like, the resources can only serve one of those sets of goals. That's politics. This is the nature of the game. And these sales skills, relationships, know your business, know your audience, know your limits, apply to every one of those scenarios and situations. So pivoting back to my three bullets on my list, business objectives aligned with known risks reduced and maturity. Let's talk about business objective alignment. So your company has yearly goals, your company has long-term goals, your company has quarterly goals. And ideally, your CEO has propagated these, and those have gone to the various C-suite teams who have in turn propagated it to their directors and managers and you know, who have propagated it on to the individual contributors. Now, not every company is that organized. I have worked for plenty that weren't. But at a high level in the C-suite room, you should still know those objectives. You should know that the CEO wants to expand into Europe, for example, or increase sales. Top line is really part of the scenario, or reduce overhead. Bottom line is really part of the scenario, or maybe shortening sales cycles so that we can tighten it up, or maybe increase our pipeline. You know, you're going to have specific business goals that are understood at the C-suite level. And this is where you should really try to live, is aligning with these goals. And we'll get into in a moment how you align with those, but Let's move on to the next one, which is the business risks. The business risks is real straightforward as well. The key message here is that not every cyber risk is a business risk. This is one of my mantras. You've got things that you care about, that your team cares about, that your team has bubbled up to you, that simply don't land on the business risk radar. And you've got to be able to distinguish and differentiate. We'll get into some of those as well. So let's start with business objective alignment. It's the trickiest art form of what we do. There are times that we are facilitating. There are times that we are flat out enabling. There are times, and those are the rarest ones. And then there are times that we sort of are this barely there adjunct role that we really sort of have to do our best to tie. And I'll give some examples. Let's go back and look at our list of four. Expand into Europe. If you're going to expand into Europe, you got to do GDPR. If you're going to do GDPR, in theory, your organization has general counsel and privacy officers. In practice, the odds are a ton of this falls on the CISO. This one's pretty easy. We're going to expand into Europe. We therefore need to get into GDPR, and here's the kinds of things the GRC team or the CISO's team or the technical teams are going to have to do to comply with GDPR and drive these things. So now you've got a GDPR project on your plate. Easy peasy, expand into Europe. How about increased sales? This is what we've talked about before, where CISOs have things they can do. You can join sales calls. You can speed up the way your company answers third-party risk questionnaires. You can make sure that you achieve SOC 2. You can make sure that you achieve ISO 27001. Speaking of expand into Europe, there's another example. These kinds of things you can do to accelerate and speed up sales. So there should be projects and missions that you have that facilitate that objective that you can cite and speak to and say, this is why we're spending effort, time, or money in my organization, because we're achieving this goal of increasing sales. Reducing overhead is a little trickier. This puts you almost more in the CIO seat, where you've got to figure out, how can I achieve the same security for less money without the constant violence of rip and replace, right? I'm not an advocate of rip and replace just to save a few bucks. By the time you've gotten something stabilized, there's benefit to the org that it is stable. There is a lot of overhead associated with risk and replace that oftentimes, just in terms of sheer labor, is offsetting whatever savings you might get by a rip and replace. But that doesn't mean you can't periodically look to streamline, reduce your stack, increase capabilities, God forbid, embrace a platform solution. Occasionally that does make sense. So there's a lot you can do there, but you're mostly thinking like a CIO in that one, and lean on your CIO and learn from them how they've managed to pull this off, because their job is keep the lights on, keep the same technology capabilities or more on the table while reducing overhead at the same time. Learn from your CIO for that one. Shortening sales cycles, we already covered some of those. Speeding up the way in which you guys are the third party, speeding up the way in which your risks are associated and communicated. CISO to CISO meetings, I found to be the most valuable thing you can do here. If you can get in front of the buying company's CISO and have a very fast CISO to CISO baud rate conversation, you can shorten and bypass so many things. So these are just some examples of how you align with these business objectives. And now for a brief word from our sponsor. Alford & Adams Consulting offers strategic and transformative cybersecurity consulting, fractional CISO and vCISO services. We offer assessments, plans, programs, and anything else you might need to be successful in your cybersecurity journey. We can even help you find good cyber insurers and good partners to help manage the day-to-day. Find out more at alfordandadams.com. That's alfordandadams.com. Thank you. Now let's pivot back to the risk statement. Cyber risk does not equal business risk, right? How do we establish what those business risks are? First and foremost, you've probably already got a list of them from the CFO. Befriend the CFO and learn from them what the business risks are they've mentioned. They could talk about fraud. They could talk about, bank theft and, various and sundry financial risks, right? They've probably got a good list. Now, the CEO and the rest of the C-suite may well, depending on the maturity of the organization, have other business risks in mind. And if they don't, this is a great time for you to demonstrate some of the highest value you will ever bring your organization, and that is conducting a business impact analysis and being the facilitator of an exercise with the entire rest of the C-suite in the room, or at a minimum, their VPs. You can ask, hey, assign me a VP. I'm going to go lead this mission. VPs oftentimes are better at it than the C-suite themselves. Keep that in mind. I've got a business impact analysis tool, BIA Lite, that I've put up on my website. If you go to alfordandadams.com and scroll down to the bottom, I think it's called Resources. You'll see our BIA Lite calculator that I wrote many years ago. It was originally designed to analyze business processes. I added the concept of business assets into it. I'm not sure the assets have been added as cleanly as they needed to be. We're working on that. I've got a friend who's actually helping me expand that project. But for now, just think of it in terms of business processes. What the BIA Lite exercise is you literally sit down with everybody in the room, and again, it's VPs or above, and you say, what are the things we do as a business that we most care about? What are the business processes that most matter? Probably right off the bat, sales is going to come up. Let's imagine you have a call center with a bunch of BDRs who are just cranking through cold calls and trying to woo and win, potential customers and bring them to a real salesperson who's going to close the deal. So you've got voice communications to potential customers. That's a business process right there. Notice we haven't talked about the technology at all. We've said voice communications because generally that's how it's done. But there may also be email communications. For the same purpose, right? That's about as technology-centric as you want to get on the initial pass of what is a business process. And you jot all these things down on the whiteboard. Let's say you've got other stuff like getting source code from server to production, assembly line risk, getting parts assembled on an assembly line. If you're a manufacturing entity, that's probably the single most important thing you've got is keeping those assembly lines humming, because that is revenue, right? Every minute of downtime is lost revenue. These kinds of examples. And then you also want to think in terms of the bigger fish, sometimes not necessarily a process, and this is where I pivoted into assets. For example, you're a software company. All you produce is software. You obviously want to protect your source code. That's sort of your crown jewels of the company. Somebody hijacks your source code, inserts, malicious code a la SolarWinds kind of scenario. That's really bad. Somebody steals your code and starts, manufacturing a product in China that's exactly like yours. That's kind of bad. So assets do matter. Protecting source code would be a great one to put on the list. Once the list is formed and people get an idea of, in your world, what matters the most, and you'll have the marketing people say, well, marketing outreach is the most important thing we do. Okay, throw marketing outreach on the board. Every leader in that room is going to start realizing they've got business processes that are priorities to them. You get all those on the whiteboard, and then you go through the BIA calculator. And as a collective group, you start to determine what's the most important things. And you're asking really fundamental questions in my calculator, like, how long can we afford to be without this process or asset, right? Like, can we go 2 days? Can we go 2 weeks? Can we go a month? Can we go 2 hours? How important is it that it be back up and running? How quickly and how painful is it that it's down? There's one set of questions. There's a bunch of other questions that you score, dollar value and impact to revenue, impact to indirect bottom line, reputational damage. The calculator walks you through all these things, and you collectively score these things. And when you are done, you now have a stack ranked list of business risks that collectively the leadership of the business has agreed to. You may determine that protecting the source code is number one, followed by, the call center has to be up and running, followed by emails for the whole company need to be up and running, followed by yada, yada, yada. And maybe, the company website is down, is not that big a one. Maybe that's on the tail end of the list because you're not actually doing direct sales through your website. It's strictly a marketing tool and, websites go down. It's not that big a deal. Maybe it's lower on the list. You get the idea. You have collectively voted, analyzed, and calculated. That is your set of business risks. And now every solution you propose should be in priority order against that stack ranked list of business risks. That's the greatest way I know of to participate as a CISO in establishing business risk, to lead the effort, to come back to the C-suite and the board and say, the business has spoken, these are the things we care about most, and now here's my punch list. Suddenly you're not selling so much, you're aligning more than you're selling, and it's a lot easier job. So that's my tip there. Now we have other kinds of risks, right? There are going to be cyber risks that you have that you value, that your team values, that don't necessarily directly align with the business risk. I'll give you a good example. Let's imagine that during the business risk exercise, somebody pointed out that ransomware would suck because everything would be down, right? Like, the whole business seizing to a halt, every business process all locked up because of ransomware. That one should always bubble up in a good BIA exercise because that's literally something touching almost all the processes. The computers on the factory floor go down, you're no longer manufacturing. The computers in the call center go down, you're no longer calling, et cetera, et cetera. So ransomware should probably be a pretty high risk for any one of these scenarios. And now you talk about the primary ways of addressing ransomware, and you get your EDR deployed, and you get your MFA deployed, and you get your security awareness training program fully facilitated, and you've done all these things, and you've sold these things, and you've gotten the money, and you've deployed, and you've delivered, per the earlier comment about you always have to deliver if you're going to be successful on the next round of selling. There you have it. And now you still have some unpatched servers. Your team is antsy and itchy about these, but in the greater context of the ransomware risk, how important are they really now? And this is where true selling comes into play. You've got to decide for yourself. I've still got these outstanding issues here that are cyber risks that I recognize are cyber risks. I have to think through this list very carefully. And the next round of asks I have and the next round of selling I do, I better darn well be able to tie them as sort of secondary rings to an existing business risk. If not, I'm introducing a whole new business risk, which shouldn't be happening. The BIA exercise should have addressed them all. Maybe you forgot one. Maybe it is a real business risk. If it is a real business risk, probably easier to swallow for the business, but at the same time, they're going to wonder why you're bringing it up now. But more often than not, it's sort of an adjunct or second stage contributory factor to a risk that you're already largely addressing, like EDR, MFA, security awareness training is already done. Is that one unpatched server really contributing to the ransomware risk? Yeah, it is a little. And think about it that way. Adjunct rings of defense after you've gotten the primaries, right? So be careful when you sell the ransomware solutions in the first place. EDR and MFA are step one. Always clarify that. Step one. These are the biggest and most important steps. We can circle back to the others later, but we will be circling back to the others later. Don't forget that forward-looking perspective. So that, to me, is the business alignment. That is the risk alignment. And finally, we get into the maturity. Maturity is a great one, I think. And I know that depending on the maturity of the organization, maturity can suddenly backfire on you. And I say that because what if your org is at a 4.2 on a scale of 0 to 5? And we're talking CMMI, ITIL, COBIT, pick one, I don't care. You're already at a 4.2. It's really hard to argue, I need to spend a boatload of money to get us to a 4.3. Right? 4.2 is pretty darn good already, and anybody in the room is going to recognize that and question why we're spending so much money aiming for perfection rather than good enough. So barring that example, maturity, I think, is a great method, because the odds are in an early organization, you're starting with a very low score that does need to come up. And even in those moments where you're starting to approach 3.5, one trick I've learned is you quit showing the full 0 to 5 scale and you show 3.5 as your baseline, and the delta from 3.5 to the next target of 4.0 looks like a much bigger gap than the delta from 0 to 4.0. Like, just in terms of how you demonstrate and present the slides, you can start addressing it as a gap analysis and not as a raw score, if you will. Just one little tip. But maturity in general works, and I'm a big believer in getting your maturity score not just from interviews and doing all the, you know, big four kind of stuff that they do. I'm a big believer in take a framework and overlay a maturity score on it. And I know CSF is not intended for this, and I know ISO is not intended for this, and I know CISV-8 is not intended for this. These are all true statements, and even in the back of the CSF verbiage, you will see them talk about a 4-point maturity scale they've invented, and they will be quick to say maturity does not replace a program. That is correct. Maturity does not replace a program, but it is a brilliant overlay on a program. So pick your framework, CIS, CSF, I don't care. Let's say it's CSF 2.0. For each question you ask, you don't say binary yes, no answers. You no longer say, do you have a hardware asset inventory, yes or no? You say, on a scale of 0 to 5, how far along your hardware asset inventory journey are you? And this is where obviously a lot of subjectivity comes into play, but you should try your best to be objective. And what I always try to do is set 3 on the 0 to 5 scale as you have the thing. 4 is you've optimized the thing and it's pretty well integrated into business processes at this point. And 5 is it's actually automated. That's my general scale. So for example, hardware asset inventory, a 0 would be you have nothing. A 1 would be you have a few spreadsheets, but they're probably not even comprehensive. A 2 would be you've got it all in spreadsheets, but it's still in spreadsheets. A 3 would be you have a CASB or a CASM or something like that, you know, clocking this stuff for you. A 4 would be the whole business knows every time you spin up a machine, there's processes involved, and, you know, data centers and engineering teams and IT teams all know to go through process and make sure that new stuff is accounted for. And that's kind of your business process integration. And finally, step 5 automation would be, hey, we've got all of our other tools, our EDR and our DLP and our, you know, network scan tools and our SolarWinds and our everything all feeding the CASB with automated information, reconciling and getting to a point where it's like, hey, I see this IP address in 4 different ways. Let's go dig into that. You know, only the discrepancies require human intervention. That's an example there. And if you're going with that kind of a maturity approach, you can then take the benefits of the framework in question and even do some breakdowns. Like, let's look at CISV-8. Just like CSF, it does identify, protect, detect, respond, recover. There's 5 categories you can focus on and show the individual maturity of those 5, not just the overall maturity of the org. But you can also do it by asset type on CIS. You can talk about what are the assets in CIS, data, server, you know, that kind of thing. You can slice and dice any number of ways. You can overlay your own models in terms of, you know, how you break these things down. You could even do it by department if you want to. There's a million and one ways to slice and dice and demonstrate that maturity and show where the weak spots are. And again, it becomes much easier to sell your mission if you're focused on that weak spot. We are a 3 or higher across the board, except over here in marketing, we have a 1.2. We need to address that gap. We are a 4 or higher in all of our, you know, identify, protect, except over here on respond, recover, we're looking low, or whatever the story might be. It's a lot easier with a measured number to start your selling position. It's a lot easier to make it a comparative physic, especially department to department. Taking the time to overlay that one is very helpful. Gamification is a huge deal. Gamification can solve a number of selling problems for you just across the board. So, folks, that's what I have on selling the mission. You know, what we've concluded here is that, yes, CISOs are, in fact, still selling the mission, regardless of the size and shape and where they're at. The CISOs from the enterprise world probably have a better perspective on how to do this than the startup guys do. Learn from them and go through the steps and exercises I listed. Check out the BIA Lite tool on the website if you guys like it. Let me know. If you don't like it, let me know. Like I said, the asset section is a little bit weaker than the process section, but we're working on it. It's a work in progress. We'd be glad to have your feedback on it. We'd be glad to have you participate in shaping that document because I think the world needs something like that. Real business impact analysis exists. Heavier frameworks and methods exist. But if you're coming into a business that has never done this before, the BIA Lite is in my mind, one of the quickest and best ways to get that off the ground. So with that all being said, I thank you, listeners. I'll be good now.